September, October, November. Have a time you'll always remember at beautiful Mount Airy Lodge.
Make your fall fabulous at Mount Airy Lodge or Pocono Gardens. Do all the things you've wanted to do all summer, all day, all night. Winter, spring, summer, fall. Call 966-7210 for reservations at Pocono Gardens and beautiful Mount Airy Lodge.
Hello and welcome to FW Presents, the anthology show for the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly, and this is another episode of Mountain Comics, the show where I look back at the comic books I bought while on vacation in the Pocono Mountains of Pennsylvania in the 1970s and 1980s. And joining me in the cabin this week is my friend and fellow Poconos vacationer haver, Keith Bowman. Hi, Keith.
Hello. Great to be here.
I am so excited to have you here because, as I just said, everybody, Keith went on vacation in the Pocono Mountains in the same area at the same time as me. Oh, my God. I have literally never spoken to someone who has had this same set of experiences as me. So I am so, so excited to do this. Now, ostensibly, we're here to talk about the Mountain Comic Marvel Superheroes number 67, which was on sale August 3rd. 1977, and of course, is a Hulk reprint. But I'm going to say, I have no idea whether we're going to get to the comic or not. We might not, because Keith and I have so many stories to share. So we're going on this journey together. We will find out whether we have time to get to the comic or not. So Keith, I mean, oh man, tell everybody your history of when you went on vacation and the context of it all.
So first of all, I'd like to tell the story about how I first heard about Mountain Comics.
Okay,
because it was crazy in itself, because I had listened to your other podcast, the Treasury Cast,
okay,
and the Digest one, like all that is my sweet spot. So I was actually, every year I go camping with a high school friend of mine. We go camping in the Pocono Mountains for 3 or 4 days every summer, early fall. And a couple of years ago, it must have been 2 or 3 years ago now, we were camping. And it was late at night, and I couldn't get to sleep, so I'm like, I'm just going to listen to some podcasts. So I was flipping through, and I saw on the Fire and Water Network, there was Mountain Comics. I was like, what the heck is this? I'm like, all right, well, let me listen to this. So as soon as it started, and you gave your spiel about being in the Pocono Mountains in the late 70s and in the early 80s, I flipped out. Because, first of all, I'm in the Pocono Mountains.
Right.
Listening to this. And then, second of all, I'm like, that was me. Because my parents, my mom got remarried when I was about 11 or 12. And my stepdad's family had 2 cabins in the Poconos.
Wow.
Him and his brother, they both had 2 cabins about a block away from each other. If it's even a block, I don't know what they call it in the Pocono Mountains.
It was a dirt road. Exactly.
And so we would go up there every summer, both families, my uncle's family and all my cousins and my family. And we'd go up for at least 4 or 5 weeks, and then we'd go home for a couple days, and then we'd go back up for a couple weeks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we spent a lot of time in Pocono Mountains. So every trip up there, we would stop at this little, I swear it was like a an old five and dime kind of store, and it was like part grocery store and part like a five and dime store.
Right.
And they would have a magazine rack that had comics. And so I would stock up. I would ask my parents for a couple bucks, and I'd buy whatever comics were on the shelf there. And then I would just read those comics over and over and over again for the next couple of weeks because I was so bored that I had nothing to do besides read those comics. So when I heard the time period that you're talking about is exactly the same time when I was in the mountains. So the fact that there was another child doing exactly the same thing as me is kind of mind-boggling.
So where were your cabins in relation to, like, I'm going to set the scene a little bit for everybody, of course, because everybody listening to this has not been there. Basically, there is one road going through the Pocono Mountains.
Yep.
And so no matter where you're going, you have to take that road to get there.
Right.
So the quote-unquote big town in the Pocono Mountains was Hawley, right, which was this tiny little town. It basically is just one road with a couple of side streets, and there was like a diner and a barber shop and you know, your basic stuff, and they had New Sense. So where were your cabins in relation to
our Hawley? Cabin was basically between Big Boulder and Jack Frost.
Okay. All right.
So we were over by the Big Boulder, like the entrance to that. I forget the name of the road, but we had like our own like little lake that was there. Mm-hmm. So we'd go swimming in the lake, that kind of thing, and go to Camelback Mountain for the Alpine slide.
I did that too.
But yeah, so we were there, and that's why, like, if you get off the turnpike, I forget the name of that road, but there's like now there's a McDonald's on one side, and now there's a Wawa on the right hand side. If you make the left-hand turn at that light, you'll be going towards Big Boulder and eventually come right to the I swear that Five and Dime store is on that road somewhere. And I've gone up there looking for it. And I found something that I think is similar to it. But at the same time, my memories are of like this other, because we would come up a back way as well. Mm-hmm. We would take these back roads sometimes. My dad would like the scenic drive. And I have a feeling that there was a small town in that scenic drive is the one that we would always stop at and get our supplies.
Right, right. You guys have a TV? Because we did not. That's why I read so much, is that there wasn't a TV to watch.
We did, but, you know, back then it was 3, 6, 10.
Right.
And 1729 and
1729, sure,
right?
Yeah.
Right. And lousy reception.
Mm-hmm. So, right, 'cause you're in the mountains, right? Yeah,
because and during the summer, during the day, there's nothing on but soap operas and game shows and stuff like that. So yeah, so there wasn't much to do. So yeah, that's why I would sit. My sister and I had we had one room and a bunk bed. And I always take the top bunk.
Me too. And even though I had nobody else to share it with, I still took the top bunk.
And I would just lay there reading these comics over and over and over again. And it's funny, like you, I can remember specific issues that I got that I had up with me at the mountains. Most of them are a blur, but there are specific issues that I remember.
Which ones do you remember getting?
Machine Man.
Okay.
Again, and much like you, like it was weird because first of all, my parents are super religious, and so they were very anti-comic. Right.
Oh, wow. Okay.
For all the reasons, you know, back then, like, you know, there was all those reasons of it promoted violence and all that kind of stuff. But every now and then they, and then also like anytime I did bad in school, the first thing they would take away from me was my comics. That kind of thing.
Yeah. Yep.
Right. So I had hidden stashes like everywhere.
Me too.
So it was very rare that I got to get comics. So on a regular basis. So that was the one time I did. So when I would go, I would immediately pick out anything that struck my imagination, like, especially if it was something I hadn't seen before. At that time, I can remember DC had their Dial H for Hero comic.
Right, right. I remember in Adventure Comics. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember getting a few of those just because it was so different.
Yes, yes.
Machine Man. But then I would also always go for... I was more of a Marvel man than a DC at that point in time.
Okay.
So anything, and I had a growing up. I don't know about you, but growing up, I spent 90% of my summer at home on my bike. I would just mm-hmm. like drive my bike everywhere. Mm-hmm. And back then, for some reason, parents didn't care about where you were.
Like yeah.
Like I was like 7 or 8 years old, and I would be biking around. I grew up in the Warminster area. So I'd be biking around. I would leave the house at 9 o'clock in the morning and not come home until dinner time.
Yeah. Be back by dinner.
Where I was, right? So, but all I did all summer long was ride my bike around, going to Kmart, looking in the chain slots of vending machines, cigarettes machines, and looking for change anywhere I could find change. I would get the change and then I would bike to 7-Eleven. And I would get a superhero Slurpee cup and a comic book. Mm-hmm. And at that time, since I spent so much time trying to find change, I would want to get the most heroes for my buck. So I I would always go for like the team up books.
Okay.
Or I would go for the the group books like Justice League or something. Anything where you can get more heroes for your buck.
So now you said when you were on vacation, your parents bought you the comics, like, but they weren't happy with it, but they kind of did it anyway because it was just a way to probably keep you quiet for long periods of time.
Yeah, it would get me out of their hair. You know what I mean? They would give me a couple bucks and just I would buy the comics. I also remember having the going up there at Christmas time to go skiing, and my mom bought me both of the Star Wars treasuries.
Oh, score!
Yeah. Like, and oh my gosh, I love those two treasuries. And it was so unusual that my mom bought it for me, but I remember reading it in the Poconos, like nonstop, just reading and reading it, absorbing it.
So when you would run out of, did you bug your parents to kind of like take you further and further away from the house to go check out new places? Because that was part of my experience was like, you know, I would hit up the local places, the ones closest to the cabin, and then right. It would be like, let's go a little further, you know, that kind of thing. It was like a bank robbery. You can only rob the same bank, you know, once every, so you have to kind of rotate through. So
yeah.
Did you do that? Like, you would go further out into the other Five and Dimes as you got further away from your house?
Well, luckily, yes. And then, like I said, my uncle and his family was like right up the street. And so, like, right. Families would get together. All the women would play, like, bridge or pinochle, like, all day long. And the kids would just be running around. And then you'd spend some time fishing or whatever. But anytime I would hang out at my uncle's house, because they were always going for supplies. It seemed like they were always running out of something or always needed something. So I would always tag along exactly for that reason. It's like, hey, you know, can I find, like, up there, there's tons of, like, antique places and like little books that would sell a lot of like rack toys and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So anything that I could find that I could beg some money for, and you know, so I would always come back. And my one cousin would read. He wasn't real big into comics, but he would always have like a stash. So I would always read his comics.
Do you remember this, other than the One Five and Dime you mentioned, do you remember some of the other stores? Because I can still recall, like, a lot of them. And, like, did you start to figure out, like, which ones were going to have a greater selection than others? Because, like, you mentioned the Star Wars treasuries. Like, the closest Five and Dime to our cabin had a couple of comics. That was it.
Yeah.
But then, like, the Trading Post in Hawley had black and white magazines.
Yeah.
You know, and that was like, oh, I could get Savage Sword of Conan or maybe a Warren. Like, you know, that, and it was like you're talking about, it was so exciting because it was stuff that you didn't get to see at home for the most part.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And it's funny because, the one place that we'd stop on the way up to get supplies, they had a pretty good selection. And it might have been something like that because they did have black and white magazines.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
For some reason, I can always remember getting the black and whites when I went to the shore, when I went to Ocean City, New Jersey, the boardwalk. I remember I had a couple of the Hulk ones.
Right, Rampaging Hulk, yes.
With, like, Dominic Fortune was, like, the backstory.
Mm-hmm.
But the place that we used to go to, they had a pretty good selection. I mean, it wasn't like a spinner rack. But it was definitely a couple rows of comics. But I don't know how long they sat there either. You know what I mean? Because as a kid, I had no concept of, you know, consecutive issues of anything. I would just read a story, just pick it up, like I said, because it looked interesting.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know anything about cover dates and things like that or stuff. That was – when I started the show and I used Mike's Amazing World – to kind of find what books were on sale when, I could see that some comics that I knew I had then that I remember buying were like comics from July.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, they just didn't pull them off yet, you know, because of course it's a newsstand vendor. Like maybe they get to it, maybe they don't. Well, but I mean, there was lots of stuff that was still basically not, it wasn't like it wasn't not supposed to be on sale, but presumably you're not supposed to like let multiple issues pile up. But a lot of these places did because they were like, well, I just didn't get around to it.
Right. You know what? The craziest thing about it is because after listening to your show, I found that site. So right. I did the same thing. I've been going back because early 80s, it must have been 81 or 82, for Christmas, I had the best comic Christmas ever. And the fact that my mom gave me a couple comics in my stocking. So that was unusual. So I can even remember what it was. It was Spider-Man Team Up 101 with Nighthawk on the cover. And then my aunt and my grandparents came over that afternoon, and my aunt gave me a shoebox. And when I opened it up, it was a shoebox filled with comics. She had gone to their local drugstore or 7-Eleven or something and she said she bought one of every comic.
Wow.
Now, the weird thing is I can still remember almost every single comic in that box because it was such a huge gift to me.
Yeah, that's a cool present.
But when I looked at Mike's and looked up the cover dates and stuff like that, it just didn't make sense. Like, I'm like, how did that, like, it was months and months that comic had to sit on the rack, some of them, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't know what the rules were back then. So I swear in the Poconos, those comics had to sit there for a long time.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, the newsstand vendors they're busy, you know, and especially if it's a place that sells lots of different things, they have so many things to worry about. They're not bothering to look at the comics. So did you, I mean, you said that you were kind of bored up there. Did you actually like the trips, though? I mean, did you enjoy it when you were up there?
Not a lot.
Okay.
You know, because usually, you know, it's summertime and you want to be with your friends, and then you're going to be up there for 4 weeks
with your cousins, parents, right?
You know, so eventually, you know, it was fun, but it wasn't a ton of fun. Like I said, like going to Camelback for the Alpine Slide was a big thing.
Right.
Yeah, and I think that's why I read those comics so much and so often, because they're literally, I wasn't a big fisher. Like my grandfather would like to go out fishing.
Yeah,
I would enjoy it, but that wasn't really me. So I brought my bike up. I'd bike around up there, but you're just biking on dirt roads.
Yep.
So,
and it's a little dangerous because that main road is really windy.
Oh, yeah.
And cars come whipping around. That is actually, my father came within a couple of inches of being hit by a truck when him and my mom were walking on the side of the road just for a walk. And this truck came whipping around and just was a little too close to the line and missed my dad by, you know, by about that much. And it's like they came back and they were both shaken. And so that road was – I never brought my bike. We had no room for that thing, and we just didn't have any room in our car for that. That would have been kind of cool, but I think my parents probably never would have let me ride on it because that road was a little –
Is it a family cabin that you guys had?
Yeah, we had there was I don't even know what you'd call it. It's not a development, but there was an older couple, and they had a little plot of land with like eight cabins on it, and it was called Lock Highlands. That was the name of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was off the main road. Like if you took, you know, you went off that main road and you went down to like a sub road, and then you went further down, and it spilled out right onto Lake Wampaupack. And so all the cabins had views of the lake. And we had the sort of main cabin, which was number two, which was the one with the best view. And that was the one that my mom used to go to when she was a teenager with friends. And then she roped my dad into it. And so I had been going that since I was born. I mean, I was born in August. And so they started taking me up as a baby, and I just kept going every year. And that's when I got old enough, I started buying comics or whatever. But that's where we were. And so we were like a couple of miles from Hall. You were further away. Did you ever venture into the town very much?
Not a lot. I would say we'd go there, you know, like maybe once a week or something. For some reason, I can remember too, there was an area, I think between there, that was kind of there's a couple of national parks up that way.
Mm-hmm,
I know that because that's where I go camping. But one of the national parks, we would go to see movies. Like they would have like a little outdoor amphitheater kind of thing.
Right.
And I remember one summer we saw, what's the Roger Corman Battle Beyond the Stars? Is it?
Oh, God. Yeah, with Richard Thomas.
Yeah.
And Robert Vaughn. Yeah.
I remember seeing and loving that movie, and seeing it in the Pokemon. But that was our entertainment. Like, we would go, it was like an outdoor theater, and then they also had like an indoor theater too, like just a big huge cabin that they would like use as a mess hall kind of thing, that they would show movies inside from time to time as well. But, and I know we saw a couple movies, but the one I vividly remember seeing was Battle Beyond the Stars.
That's a fun movie for a little kid to see. I mean, no doubt. It's, you know, it doesn't matter that it's a cheap jack Star Wars. It's still guys in space blowing stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was great. What was the last summer that you were up there?
My parents kept – we went every summer from 1970 – well, my parents went every summer from 70 through 95. And then I went, obviously, from when I was born in 71, and I went every summer from 72. And then when I went to college, art school, I stopped going for the full 2 weeks, and I would come up separately with my sister or something for like a couple of days.
Right.
Because at that point I was feeling like, I'm a little too old for spending that much time with my parents. Blah, 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 blah. But basically from 72 through 89, I spent every birthday up in the Poconos. I mean, there's photos of me with my Super Friends decorations and stuff. And, you know, we went into Holly to get me a birthday cake or whatever. And basically, I mean, I got presents, but I also just wanted comics all the time. So of the comics you bought, did they last over the years, or did you lose them, or did you hold on? I mean, the comics that I have from the mountains are, to me, my most beloved possessions at this
point. There is a very, very small stack of comics that survived my childhood. And mainly for the fact that, like, I went to college for a year in South Carolina. I came home, moved back home. And much like you, like, I wanted to get into art and design. I didn't have your foresight. After all those years of reading comics and seeing the Kerbic school, never did I once put it together that, like, oh, maybe I should look into that. but I wanted to go to art school, and my mom said to my face, the exact words were, if you want to become an artist, you'll make nothing out of your life and you'll be a bum. And
wow.
20 minutes later, I had packed up my stuff and I left the house. And, went and I moved in with a friend. And I didn't talk to my parents for 5 years. We have since reconciled and, you know, and everything's good. But, yeah, there's 5 years that I didn't talk to them. And in that 5 years, all my possessions disappeared. So either they were thrown out or they were sold. I'm guessing they were sold at local. At a yard sale kind of thing. So, like, all my Star Wars figures. It kills me. So then I spent a large amount of my time over the last, my adult years, of buying back my childhood. You know, that's what I've been doing.
That's what a lot of us do.
Which is, you know, at one point in time, I think I had a Pinterest board called Recollecting My Childhood, in which I would just, like, find things that I had, and that became my, you know, my holy grail list. So, but actually, I mean, nobody can see it, but behind me is a spinner rack that I got as my wife got me as a Christmas gift.
Awesome. I have one of those too. Fantastic.
Yeah. It's a vintage one from like the late 60s, early 70s. It's exactly the kind I used to go to 7-Eleven for. And normally I have filled the spinner rack with the comics from my childhood, the ones that I had a touchstone memory of, kind of thing. Like I said, my mom wasn't big on comics at all. So I can remember, you know, the 5 or 6 times when she would buy me a comic out of the blue. Like, I know what issues they were. You know, I remember exactly what they are, and they're the ones that are in my spinner rack.
That's really
ones
cool.
That I have like an emotional connection to.
Well, like one of the which ones do you have an emotional connection to? Like, do you remember which one specifically? I mean, is it that you can remember having it when you were in the Poconos, or was it something about the comic itself?
A little of both. Like, there's two issues of The Flash. I don't know the numbers, but I know the cover. But they were ones that my mom just came home one day and was like, hey, I stopped at, you know, the drugstore on the way home, and I thought you might like this. And she handed me a Flash comic, you know what I mean? And there's very little photo evidence of my childhood, but there is one picture of me at a soccer field. My sister was playing soccer, and I'm laying in the field with our dog next to me, and I'm reading a comic, and it's that Flash comic. And I remember that distinctively that day, like it was yesterday kind of thing. There's certain comics. There's a I just had it up, too. There's a Fantastic Four, three issues that I distinctly remember getting as a bag, like the triple bag comics.
Oh, really? Okay.
And I got those, a lot of those, in the mountains.
Did you really?
Oh, yes.
That's interesting. I don't think I ever saw them for sale anywhere, at least the newsstands that I went to.
Yeah, see, and again, I don't know if it was a newsstand or a grocery store where I got my memory is that it was a hybrid. It was like a part five and dime kind of thing that had a lot of toys and like rack toys, that kind
of
thing.
Right.
And then there was like a grocery store aspect to it. Almost like two stores combined, like you go from one into the other without having to go outside.
Okay.
But there was a series, there was three issues of Fantastic Four that I remember getting the bagged comic, and I've been looking forever to get them in that bag. like I have all three issues, but I want it in the bag, you know? Because I remember distinctively getting it on the way to the cabin and then just reading and rereading those issues.
But now, you mentioned photos, and that's something that I've talked about a little bit on the show, is that there are my parents have a whole separate set of photo albums for our Poconos vacations. And so those are the photos I go through, and, you know, I can look and see that starting around 1975 or so, there will be pictures of me at the mountains with comics in the background, or I'm reading one, I'm holding one. There's a picture of me holding Captain America number 263 on the porch, and that's the comic I profiled in season two of the show, and stuff like that. And, you know, after I went through all the photo albums, I was like, well, that's it. Like, there are no more photos to go through. And then just a couple of months ago, my mom was like, oh, there's a box of photos that I've never, like, put into the book. Do you want to look through if there's anything you're interested in? And I was like, oh, wow. So I'm going through it. And I found a photo of me laying on our couch with our dog. And in the foreground is an issue of Mad Magazine, which is the one I talked about with Max Romero last season.
Yeah.
And it was like gold in my hand. It was like, oh, I didn't know that any more of these existed, because obviously that's it. They don't exist anywhere else. Are there any photos of you from those from the Pocono vacations?
I wish. Again, like my family, for some reason, was not big on photography.
Okay.
There is very little photo evidence of my childhood whatsoever, which is depressing. In fact, I belong to the same Facebook group as you do. A lot of them, and somebody's been posting like T-shirt Tuesdays, where they, you know, show pictures of them wearing like their classic T-shirts that they had from the 70s and 80s. And so I'm so jealous, because I want to participate in that thread, but I cannot, because there is no – although I had, like, all those cool superhero and Star Wars T-shirts.
Right.
Unfortunately, there's no photo evidence of that.
Wow. Your parents just were not bothering to document things?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know why that is. And what's even worse is because now they have terrible memories, too. So I can't, like, really – pump them for information about my childhood. I remember more of my childhood and growing up than they do. So, it is kind of weird. But it is weird that there are specific, in fact, a lot of the comics that I can remember, like I said, they're either ones that my mom bought me or my dad bought me out of the blue, or they were from the mountains. And I think it was the mountain comics hold true to me, because like you said, there wasn't anything to do.
Right.
So I would spend a lot of my time by myself, just kind of occupying myself. So I would read the comics over and over and over again. I would read the letter pages. I would, you know, then I would start to draw, you know, try to mimic the scenes in the comic and draw that kind of thing. So yeah, those comics stick out more than any other comics to me.
It's funny you mention about like what your parents remember out of your life and what you remember. And it's like the stuff that gets emblazoned into your brain. Like I no lie, like there are girlfriends I have whose last names I can't remember at this point, but, but I can remember one time and well, it would have been 1982 where my parents and I drove into Honesdale, which was like, you know, the big version of Holly, which is absurd, really, because Holly was one street. Honesdale, I think, was five streets or something. But we went to Honesdale for some reason. And, of course, that to me, that was like, ooh, there's more newsstands to hit.
Right.
And I remember going into a newsstand slash barber shop. And I can and this is – you're talking, what, almost 40 years ago at this point. And I still can remember – walking into the newsstand and it was raised. So you had to like go up three steps and then, you know, that was the store. And the first part of the store was the newsstand. And I remember seeing the cover to All-Star Squadron Annual Number One drawn by Jerry Ordway. And it had this magenta guy on it with this green background. And I just remembered, I knew that that book was coming out or I knew that they were doing an annual, but I hadn't seen it. And there it was. And I can literally still remember that sensation. And of course to my parents, you know, they don't remember any of the, you know what I mean, it's like to them it was like it's a blur of things that happened, but to me it was like it's still so distinct in my memory despite the fact that it's four decades ago and it, the whole transaction probably took about 5 minutes. But nevertheless, you know, now the comics that you have, because I'm curious if like me, there were some books that you only got when you were on vacation because you were in the market to get more books. Cause like I have a certain series where like there are gaps in the numbering because I didn't get them when I was home. So it's like, I have two issues of Captain America and then the next set of Captain America's are 12 issues later. Cause it's a year later. Cause it wasn't something I bought at home. Did you have that too?
Yeah. And again, because like I unless I was collecting money, right, from during my summer biking around, trying to get enough money to go to 7-Eleven to buy myself a comic, or my parents, I guess I would have to go to the grocery store. That's where I got the grocery. Our local grocery store is the one that had a lot of bagged comics as well. So if my mom needed me to go grocery shopping with her, she would bribe me by like, oh, I can get a bagged comics. You know, I get three comics. So that you were definitely, whatever was in the bag is what you were getting. You know what I mean? You used to have to do that you could see the first comic and you could see the second comic. And then you had to peel as much as you can to see what that third middle comic was. And it was so infuriating trying to get it. Cause the bag was so tight that ultimately I busted a lot of bags, I think. Thinking about what that. So I had like huge gaps between. So when I got comics and when I went to the mountains and I would pick out my comics, I would always go to the end of the comic to see if the story ended.
Oh, crafty.
Because I wanted like the one shots. I didn't want, because I knew I wasn't going to be able to get the next story because it was going to be a while before I was going to get comics again. So anytime I would always look to see if it was a one shot, it was going home with. But if it said to be continued, I would pass on those books.
That's pretty sharp, man. I would never have thought to do something like that.
Oh, I had this scheme all the time, right? To get my money's worth and to be able to get the most enjoyment out of it because I knew I wasn't going to be getting a lot of comics.
Yeah, again, back in the days when you know there weren't fanzines or anything, or at least if there were, you weren't aware of them. At least I wasn't. So it was like when books were canceled, like you didn't, unless they had an announcement, you didn't know. Like the book just disappeared,
right?
You know, like it's just like, okay, I guess they don't make Sergeant Fury and his Howling Commandos anymore. I have no idea. You know,
I have a funny story about cancelizations of books. Is I begged and begged and begged and begged and begged my mom to get me a subscription and she finally relented and said, okay, you can get a subscription. I was so excited. I chose Shogun Warriors.
Okay, and, cool. All right.
And I wanted a Shogun Warrior comic. And so you mail away, and then it takes forever before you get your first issue. Like, so long that I think I forgot that I put it in. But finally, a comic came in the mail. I was so excited. I opened it up, and here it was Moon Knight.
Hmm.
Because, and with a little note saying that that Shogun Warriors had been canceled. And so they hoped that that I will enjoy Moon Knight.
So here's a comic that has absolutely no similarities to Shogun Warriors.
No, and like if you remember the first run of Moon Knight, like with the what is it, Bill Sienkiewicz?
Bill Sienkiewicz, yeah, totally. Yeah. Bill Sienkiewicz, yeah.
Yeah, it was
far away from Herb Trimpe's Shogun Warriors as you could get.
Exactly. So they were mind melting comics for me. But I loved it. It was like in the early, like, I think it started with issue maybe 4 or 5. So I got 12 issues from like the 4th issue. But yeah, so that was my cancelization, my canceling comic story.
That's we are sorry that we have canceled Howard the Duck, but please enjoy Spidey Super Stories.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, Marvel. Oh my God. Wow. Jeez. That's fantastic though. Did you get all 12 Moon Knights, I guess? Like ran for a whole year?
Yeah. And I still have them too. Like that's one of the books that from my childhood has survived, that I still have, that I didn't have to repurchase.
That's fantastic.
The only other one from my childhood that I know for a fact that I still have is Justice League 193.
Which was
a Red Tornado story.
Yes.
It had the middle section was an All-Star Squadron.
Squadron, sure.
That's what you just mentioning that made me remember that. And we got that. We took a road trip to Florida to Walt Disney World one summer. And on the way to Walt Disney World, we stopped at the gas station to get gas, and I went in, and they had a spinner rack, and that was the comic I purchased. And boy, did I love that! That comic was just like it's still one of my favorite. Like everything about that comic, I love.
It's great. It's a great comic. Yep.
Yeah, and like the free 16-page comic, I'm sure I bought it just for that reason too. That I was getting an extra comic within a comic kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that, like, I can almost remember the weight of the air that day. You know what I mean? Like, that's how vivid that memory is in my mind. And I just remember we stayed overnight at a motel on the way to Walt Disney World. And, you know, I remember just laying on the bed in the motel room with the very loud, cold air conditioner, like, being just rumbling in the background as I read and reread that comic.
Isn't that amazing? And you don't know at the time what's going to get burned into your medulla oblongata, but there it is. You know,
yep.
I mean, it's just remarkable. That all of this is amazing to me, just because, like I said, I just had no idea that there was somebody else out there that not only had these experiences but had them at the same time as me. And I think, to my memory. I don't really recall ever being in a newsstand or any place where I bought my comics up there and running into like another kid. I don't ever remember that. I tended to think I was the only one that did it, but it makes me think like, did you and I, you know, shop at the same stores nearly around the same time? We might have, you know, you might have just been exiting just as I was coming in or vice versa. And that just, I don't know. My head just spins when I think about that. Like you might have picked something up that I might have wanted, or vice versa.
It's crazy. What I would love to know, and I've been going through Mike's amazing now, just trying to like look at all the comics and pick out the ones that I know that I got during that time. So I found a few that I know that I bought then. So we'll have to compare notes because I'd be really interested to see if we actually. ever picked up the same issue.
Absolutely. Oh, we're absolutely going to have to do that. I do have a – I am compiling a master list of everything from Mike's Amazing World that I can remember. So, yeah, we will absolutely have to do that at some point. So, okay, this is the perfect segue. We're actually going to talk about the comic that we're here to talk about. We're actually going to get to the comic. Which is, again, like I mentioned at the top of the show, Marvel Superheroes number 67. It reprints Incredible Hulk 113. It was on sale August 3rd, 1977. Now, so as a kid, Keith, where were you on the Hulk? Because I, as I said on previous episodes, I loved the Hulk as a kid. He was my favorite Marvel character. Now I would say it's probably more Captain America. But as a kid, I loved the Hulk. And I never missed Marvel Superheroes because, of course, Marvel Superheroes was reprinting old Hulk comics, which I had no access to at the time. So it was like getting two Hulk comics a month. I mean, it was just perfect. So where were you on that character? Were you, I guess, like, really, you know, like me, did you love him?
Yeah, the Holy Trinity for me was Spider-Man, the Hulk, and then Captain America.
Okay.
That was my Trinity that I would go to. So, yeah, I love the Hulk. I think the Hulk is the comic I have the most issues of.
Okay.
Most of, like, a complete run kind of thing. So, yeah, I definitely love Marvel Superheroes. I can remember some of the issues, that box of comics I was talking about that my aunt gave me for Christmas.
The shoebox, yeah.
Yeah, there was two Marvel superheroes in there with the Hulk. I know one of them was the Sphinx. He was fighting the Sphinx.
Okay. And
the cover had him, like, basically punching the Sphinx, if I remember correctly. But, yeah, I absolutely love the Hulk. Now, whenever I listen to you talk about comics, I'm always jealous because you talk about the writer and the artist and stuff. As a kid, like, I didn't care about that stuff at all. Like, I knew Stan Lee's name because it was at the top of everything. And I would look at the names and I would recognize, oh, this guy is the same person that's been writing this or same person that's been drawing this. But I was never, like, even understanding that this was a reprint. Like, I knew it was an older story because it says originally printed and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So, to me, it was just like watching reruns. But right. I had no concept of, like, how long ago that story
took. Oh, yeah, me neither. Yeah. I mean, unless you could literally be like, well, this is reprinting Hulk 113, and I'm currently reading Hulk 284. So, okay, that seems like a long time ago. But
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Marvel Superheroes was one of a bunch of titles that Marvel had running from the 60s through the early 80s, where they just were reprinting a lot of their classic comics. I mean, of course, there was Marvel Tales. That was the most long-running one because that reprinted Spider-Man. Marvel Superheroes was Hulk. Fantasy Masterpieces, I from recall, seemed to kind of be all over the place.
Was that a Silver Surfer?
Maybe it was Silver Surfer, yeah. Marvel Super Action. Yeah, right. Marvel Super Action was the Avengers. Amazing Adventures was X-Men. Marvel's Greatest Comics was Fantastic Four. And, you know,
Triple Action.
Which one was Marvel Triple Action?
What did they reprint? I believe it was always, like, Spider-Man, the Avengers, and Hulk, maybe?
Okay.
Maybe all Captain right. America. I know I would get Triple Action because, again, I was getting so much for my money.
Right.
So many superheroes for my money.
Yeah, I mean, all these books, except for Marvel Tales, which lasted a little longer, pretty much all these titles went away in the early 80s. And that, you know, I have to think that's not coincidental that that's when the direct market really picked up, where there just wasn't the need to have older stories in an ongoing comic, and more fans became like, oh, I don't want to read a reprint. I want to read a new comic. And I think that's why most of these titles eventually went away. So a lot of these Mountain Comics that I had of these reprint titles, I was catching them kind of near their tail end. Now, Marvel Superheroes, this is 1977. It still had another 60 or so issues to go.
Okay.
But, like, when I did the Marvel Super Action a couple seasons ago with Gene Hendricks, like, I caught that in literally the last issue. So, I mean, a lot of these titles were starting to fade away at this point. But I remember this one. This was one that I had to go back and find as a back issue because I had lost the comic over time. But when I saw the cover on Mike's Amazing World, I went, yep, I had that one. I can remember it. I remember the cover. It's by Herb Trimpe and Mike Esposito, because it's a new cover. It's funny because the original cover is very similar to the new one. It's basically the same pose of the Sandman wrapping his sand around Hulk's neck. So I don't even know why they even bothered to do a new cover. It's almost basically the same thing. But this cover of Sandman in his superhero costume, not the pinstripe shirt that he normally wears, and
right.
This is more of his He-Man looking type suit, and he's got his sand arm around the Hulk, and it says "When Fall the Shifting Sands." Again, the great Stan Lee title. The stories by Stan Lee, the aforementioned Herb Trimpe, and Dan Adkins. So the plot so much is trapped in a spaceship not built to sustain human life. Bruce Banner is slowly being killed by the immense pressure while it takes him back to Earth. However, he manages to calibrate the machines to expel gamma radiation that turns Banner into the Hulk again, so that may he survive the rest of the trip home. Meanwhile, on Earth, the Sandman plots to steal a new experimental rocket from the missile base in the hopes he can pilot it into the negative zone and reunite himself with Blastar. Heading to the base, the Sandman witnesses the Hulk ship landing on Earth. After the Hulk destroys the ship, the Sandman convinces Hulk to attack the base, providing Sandman with the distraction he needs to steal the rocket. However, when Betty's life is put at risk, when the Sandman almost crashes into her car, the Hulk intervenes and stops the Sandman. As the Hulk battles him, General Ross begins to believe that the Hulk was trying to stop the Sandman when they attack the Hulk on the site. Hulk manages to defeat the Sandman, who nevertheless escapes. The Hulk frees the base as well, leaving Betty and the others to wonder what to do about the Hulk and the Sandman vowing to destroy the Hulk for good. So, okay, what do you think of this as a comic, as like a one-off Hulk story? I mean, it's not a one-and-done in that the Hulk was an ongoing drama, but it does right. tell somewhat of a complete story in that
yes.
Sandman comes in and Sandman is defeated.
Yes, which, to be honest, like, if I saw this, I don't think I had this when I was a kid, because I don't remember the cover, and I think I would have remembered that cover, because it's a really striking cover. There's so much about
the bright red, yeah.
Yeah, like the use of the primary colors, but it still has depth to it. I don't know how you feel, but I love word balloons on a cover. Like, anytime.
I miss them. You know, now that nobody does it, they're all just poster covers.
Yeah.
I do. When I see these old comics with these covers, I'm like, oh, yeah, I like
it. And I think what it is because, like, when you have that word balloon, right, it gives you – it captures that exciting feeling of being dropped in the middle of the action, mm-hmm. right, without – you know, the what he's saying gives you enough context that you can kind of – get a sense of what's going to happen that's going to hopefully entice you to buy the comic. Nowadays, I agree. Like, I see comics covers nowadays, and it's just posters. And it just never – even if you took the word balloons away from this cover, it'd be a striking image, but it still wouldn't be, I don't think, as exciting to me as a kid, especially as the ones with the word balloons. And I definitely would have bought it if I had seen it, because I liked the Sandman from Spider-Man.
Yep.
And I don't think I ever saw this version of his costume.
I like that he calls himself the new improved Sandman.
Yeah. Like the Hulk cares. But
I'm the new improved Rob Kelly. Oh, okay, sure, all right.
Yeah, so I would have definitely picked this up. And as to the story, like, it's got what you want from a Marvel comic, right? It's got yep. action, and then some more action. Like, it starts off, like, with Bruce Banner in a spaceship, but they don't tell you who the aliens are.
Mm-hmm. They don't great tell splash you. Page. Great splash page.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Bruce inside the ship, and there's the big bay window. Oh, man, it's marvelous. Yeah. Yeah, no pun intended.
I was, I don't think I was real. I was more of a Sal Buscema. Is that how you
say it? Sal Buscema, yeah.
Yeah. I was more of a, like, that was his Hulk, was the Hulk that I remember from a kid. So, like, Herb's work always strikes me as kind of like a Kirby or a Steranko light kind of thing.
Hmm.
Especially in that first panel, I love, like Bruce Banner's hand is just, like, coming at you.
And very Kirby-esque.
Yeah, and it's got some really great typography on that splash page. It's just great. But what cracks me up is that, like, I had no clue why he was in that spaceship, who put him right. in the spaceship, like what was going on. They just start the story without any explanation and it just kicks into high gear, which, you know, I kind of love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this comic, Marvel Superheroes, from what I can recall, never had any, like, bonus features from when I, again, I'd have to go back and look through them all, but, like, when I, like I talked about, when I did the Marvel Super Action, they must have had a couple extra pages to fill, maybe because the page count was off. Right. So, like, they did, like, little bonus pinups of, like, oh, yeah, here's an Avengers pinup of Ant-Man. And here, there's none of that. You don't get the cover, you don't get the original cover, yeah, you don't get any, so, yeah, there's no context of, like, well, this is what's happening. But, I mean, I guess they figured, like any other Hulk comic or any other Marvel comic, you're picking it up. They assume that you bought the previous issue anyway.
Right.
I've always liked Herb Trimpe, by the way. I think that he is one that is, as an artist, he's more susceptible to his inkers than some others. Right. But generally, I've liked Herb Trimpe's Hulk. Just kind of, I just sort of like the squat kind of view of the way he draws the Hulk.
Yeah. It's funny. Like, definitely, there's page three, I think there it was, where there's a shot of, you know, Bruce Banner pulls the lever, which I also love the word balloons. He's like, this ship is the most advanced as any known to Earth. That switch controls the output. like it's the most advanced ship known to mankind, but there's like one switch that controls the output. Which he pulls on the handle, and then like the Hulk is bathed in this gamma kind of radiation kind of thing. But that those frames of him being bathed in the gamma rays or whatever that is, and turning into the Hulk, it reminded me of a Steranko like Nick Fury couple panels.
I can see that.
Which I really enjoy, but I'm right there with you. Like I like the squat kind of wide Hulk.
Yeah.
Especially when he would fight the Thing, because they would look different. Like mm-hmm. they felt like they had a different mass to them.
I like on page it's page seven of the comic where the Hulk smashes his way out of the ship and he's like, "I've landed. The trip is over." By the way, this Hulk is a little more erudite than he would get later on. He actually speaks in full sentences here.
Yeah.
But he's like, "I've landed. The trip is over. Hulk is back where he belongs. And nobody will ever make me leave again. Nobody. Nobody. Nobody." And it's in the third nobody panel. Again, you'll be able to see these on the website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. The third nobody is not a word balloon. It's a sound effect. Yeah. And I really like that. That's something that Walt Simonson and John Workman would kind of do in Thor in the early 80s, but this is an early example of that, of like sort of messing with the topography of turning it from a word balloon into actual like sort of a lettering kind of thing, making it part of the art as opposed to a separate word balloon. So right. I like all that stuff. The Sandman's costume, this new Sandman, this was not something that lasted very long. I think everyone realized that Sandman just looks cooler as like a thug.
Yeah.
His pinstripe suit. I mean, that's the costume he wears for Pete Six in the Spider-Man movie.
Yeah.
But here, he kind of looks like a toy. Like you could it's a uniform that you would, like one of the big gym toys or something like that. He just looks a little he's got like this bar in front of his head. Like it looks very uncomfortable.
Yeah. Now, do you know who designed that by any chance?
I do not. I don't know why they felt the need to give Sandman. I guess they figured they wanted to make him more like a villain. Less, you know, like a gangster kind of guy or something. I'm guessing that was the reason.
Was Blastar the person that gave him that then?
I don't know. I don't remember. I don't remember.
Because I feel like it has cosmic elements to it.
Oh, it does.
You know what I mean? It definitely looks like – it looks like it comes from Thor, to be honest. Like it looks like it comes from that realm. Yeah, I don't like it at all. I love those Thor costumes and like that, all that kind of stuff. But for some reason, the Sandman, it just doesn't
not working for you.
It's weird. It's awkward.
I love the Sandman's thought balloons too. It's on page 19 of the comic. He's sneaking onto the base, and we get he's just thinking to himself, "The Hulk provided just the diversion I needed. Thanks to him, this area is left with a skeleton guard." So then he uses his sand powers to grab two of the guards, and he says, "And so the time has come for the Sandman to strike. as only the Sandman can. I love that he thinks about himself in the third person. That's fantastic. Like Hammer or something. I just love that. Like, I mean, it's awkward enough to talk about yourself in the third person, but to think about yourself in the third person. Like, it's like you're sitting there going, I, Keith Bowman, will be on Mountain Comics next week. Like, it's just very, very strange.
Well, it's also like, but I guess that's to show you just how evil he is.
I guess so.
Only a villain would think about himself in the third person. Yeah, and that part of the story didn't make a lick of sense. Like, first of all, it didn't make a lick of sense to me that when he first meets the Hulk, he just tries to dominate the Hulk. He just tries to get the Hulk to do his bidding. Which doesn't seem like, if you know anything about the Hulk, which apparently he does, that just doesn't seem like a plan that is well thought out. Also, I love the panel where the Hulk's going to pick up a boulder, and he basically says, "You king-sized clown, nobody can lift that boulder." But it's the Hulk. Like, yeah. It's been proven.
You must have heard of him by now.
Right. Like, you know everything about the Hulk because, you know, later on when he tries to get the Hulk to do his bidding, he talks about how people always use the Hulk and abuse the Hulk, and he plays to his sympathies that way. So obviously he knows who the Hulk is. But when he first meets him, he's basically like, "Hey, you're going to do my bidding." And then they have like this weird, not really a fight. It's more of a contest of strength that goes on between the two of them. Which it seems like, I feel like the Hulk would have just beat the tar out of the Sand.
And yeah, yeah. Well, and again, I love at the end of the story, after the Hulk gets away, there's this final panel of the Sandman standing in some, like, wooded glen, yeah. And he's like, he thinks he's beaten me, but little does the brainless brute suspect the Sandman has decreed his hours of life are numbered, and it's like, Sandman, you're lucky you got away. Just head it. Go back to taking on the Fantastic Four with Pastepot Pete or whatever. Like, don't try and pick another fight with the Hulk. You're lucky you survived this one. And then it ends with a little thing where it says Hulk in you'd, which is Stanley trying way too hard. Okay, yeah. Like, okay, I understand. Maybe if it was Captain America, you'd do Captain you'd, but right. Hulk in you'd is that's not a thing. Just stop, Stan.
I had to reread that like 3 or 4 times before I was like, oh, wait, I get what they're going for here. But it's funny because, like, as I'm reading this comic, I was just like, it's weird reading a comic that as a kid you would have never questioned anything in it. You were just along for the ride. But now that you're an adult, like, there were so many things in the story, I was just like, wait, what? Like, why is that going on? Or that's just crazy. But at the same time, that's what I love about these comics. Like, I stopped reading, to be honest, like, I stopped reading modern comics probably about 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. Just because it got too depressing for me. Like, it was always a soap opera, and everything was dark and gritty and trying to, kind of mimic what was going on in the real world, which to me, comics are the pure form of escapism, right?
Right. That's not what you were there for.
Like, people look at these old issues and they kind of make fun of them, but I love, like, the pseudoscience, and I love that they're just seeped in, like, this wonder and excitement, and they didn't care if it made sense or not. It's like, was this exciting or was it fun? You know what I mean? So, like, because there's so much about this story that if I read it now, I'm just like, I don't get it. Like, they're having this huge battle between Sandman and the Hulk, and apparently it's just right over the hill of a secret military base.
There's so many secret military bases.
And the guys on the radar are just like, hey, our radar scanner just picked up an approaching object. And the one guy's like, object my foot, it's the Hulk. Which begs two questions. Like, one, what kind of radar do they have that identifies, like, the Hulk? And second of all, like, didn't any of their high-tech equipment pick up, like, that huge fight that was going on just over the hill? You think if you have a top-secret military base, you might want to have some sort of earlier detection system.
There seem to be boulders smashing into one another at a high speed. Yeah.
But, but that's the thing I love about the story. It just starts again, like you're just dropped in the story and it just kicks off and there's like, this is all filler. I mean, this is no filler kind of story. You know what I mean?
It's just slam bang from beginning to end. Yeah. And of course the comic has a bunch of ads for some Marvel products, which is fun. There's a Howard the Duck subscription ad. And speaking of Sal Buscema, I believe that the Hostess ad, Spider-Man in Legal Eagle, is drawn by Sal Buscema. There's no credits on these, but the final panel where the villain is being carted away, those are Sal Buscema faces.
Yeah.
So I'm betting the mouth with the big nasal labial trough that he liked to draw. I believe that's by Sal. So I mean, this thing is chock-a-block with fun stuff. Again, for 35 cents.
Yeah.
You know, you got kind of, you know, you have like a little one-page Spider-Man, you got these fun ads, and then you got a whole comic. So when I saw this one again, like I said, on Mike's Amazing World, it was like, it just immediately, it was a cover I hadn't seen in 25 years, but it immediately went boom, right in my head. I was like, oh, that's the one I had. So I'm so happy to have this comic again.
So I have two questions then. Do you remember reading it?
I do not. There's only a handful that I remember literally reading, like when I did I got the Marvel Treasury Edition number 18, the Astonishing Spider-Man, which I covered on the show back in season one, I believe. Let me take that back. I covered it over on Treasury Cast with Ryan Daly. There's a lot of overlap with Mountain Comics and some of my other shows.
Yeah.
But I literally remember being up at like 7 in the morning and reading that comic on the porch and just falling in love with it and reading it a million times. And there's even a photo of me looking at it with my cousin who had come to visit that time. And you see me looking at it with her and sitting on the couch. I have all my Star Wars figures lined up sitting there reading it too. So I have that one. Yeah, so there's a handful of ones that I literally remember reading. But this one I don't. But I just know that when I look at Mike's Amazing World, some of the covers I go, nah. You know, like Archie's or Richie Rich or whatever. But then there's other ones that just go, oh, yeah. Oh, I totally remember that. So yep. And this was one of them. So I have my spinner rack and I have a side of it devoted to Mountain Comics. So all the Mountain Comics are on that side. And so that's what I sort of go through when I'm ready to do a new show. Just pull it off the rack and go and reread it for the episode. But yeah, this is a great comic. I loved Marvel Superheroes. I love the Hulk. And so it was, I'm sure I was very satisfied with my 35 cents.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. It's surprising, though, when I was reading it, there's only one frame on page 17 of the comic where Hulk's hand kind of burst out of the one frame into another frame. And as a kid, I used to love any time when a character or something would happen and it would burst out of the frame into multiple frames.
This isn't what Hulk wanted. Why am I fighting? Why am I here? Why did I listen to Sandman? Hulk having an existential moment.
And isn't that a weird frame for him to break out of, too? He's like giving a speech.
Yep. It looks like he's testifying.
Yeah. Out of all the images within the comic, that's the one that breaks frame. But man, and the sound effect from the previous panel. I love that kind of stuff. And any of these frames, it's crazy, too. Like, you can take any of these frames and blow it up into a poster and just put it on your wall, and it would be a great poster to have on.
Oh, yeah. Herb Trimpe had a great run on the – I think Sal Buscema was the one that took over for him. I don't know. I'd have to go back and look, but I think Buscema basically was the one that – there might have been one other artist in between there, but basically those are the two kind of guys that had the really long run. John Severin was in there too. I think maybe John Severin was in between. But, I mean, they – you know, there weren't – both those artists had really long runs on the character. And so, yeah, this is a really fun comic. I appreciate you actually went and got a copy for yourself so you could do the show, which I very much appreciate.
Well, yeah, without a doubt. I was kind of like, when you sent out the list, I was like, when I saw what was available, I was like, I knew I had to talk about the Hulk because, one, I love the Hulk, and two, like you said, I was a big fan of the Marvel superheroes. Anytime I saw that long logo, that and what was the the Fantastic Four one was Marvel's Greatest Comics.
Yeah, it's Marvel's Greatest Comics, yeah.
That, if you ever talk about issue 92 of that, I want to do that.
Okay.
That's the one with the Hulk versus Thing on the cover.
Oh, sweet.
That comic, I think more than any other comic in my collection, got read and reread.
I'll have to look and see if I had that one. I'll have to go back through and I'm always looking for more.
Every kid had that comic and owned that comic.
Quite possibly. So, well, I mean, Keith, geez, this is so exciting to be able to talk to someone who had these same experiences as me, who literally trod the same boards of these newsstands. Because, I mean, it's so hard to – I'm very, very pleased that people that listen to the show like the show and they can sort of transmogrify the passion that I had it for their own vacation comics. But I am so thrilled that I get to talk to someone who – was there, not only was there at like me, but was there at the same time. That is just because you know, comics were in a very particular moment in the 70s and 80s. It was a moment of transition. And it was just, you know, I still think it was like some of the most exciting comic buying times of my life. And I have said in other contexts, like, I swear that if I had a time machine, you know, like, I don't know if I would blow my only trip with the time machine on this, but if I could do maybe three trips on the time machine, one of them would be I would go back to the Poconos circa like 1979 and just hit all those stores.
Yep.
And just to have that feeling again would be so amazing. So I am so, so appreciative that you did this with me. I just am so very happy that you contacted me and we got together. And partly I have to thank Chris Franklin for help putting us together here. But I owe him for that. So, but again, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it. It was such a blast to be able to talk to someone who, again, had these same experiences as me.
Well, like I said, I appreciate you having me on here. And like I said, because I've been a fan of you for a long time. Like, I found you through researching Treasury Editions years ago. And that site, I would just go to that site all the time. And then found the podcast and the Treasury Cast, and I was listening to that. The Bob Dylan, I've listened to all of those. So it's great to finally talk to you, because I feel like I know you in a weird way.
Yeah, absolutely.
But again, like, the mind-boggling thing to me was when I first heard Mountain Comics and you talk about it, and then hearing the word Pocono come out of your mouth was just so crazy to me. And then when you talk about the time frame, like, instantaneously, I was like, oh my God, we were at the Poconos at the same exact time, buying comics at exactly the same time, and probably doing the same thing, you know, just killing time by reading some good comics.
Absolutely.
So yeah, it's a blast listening to the show. Just, I love whenever a new season drops, just because it just takes me back. Because as you're talking about it, I'm also having my own weird memories, you know what I mean? Because as you're talking about it, and it just makes me think about what I was doing at that time and what I was reading it and the summers I spent in the Poconos.
Very cool. Well, like I said, we will have to compare lists at some point soon.
I will send you that. In fact, I sent you an image.
Right. Yeah, you sent me a shot of a bunch of the comics that you had. Yeah.
So they're the ones that I know that I had up the mountains with me and got at the mountains.
Ugh. So good. Just hearing somebody say the mountains, that's not their name. Their name is the Poconos, but that's just always what my mom always called them. Yeah, so that's what I call them. That's what we call them. So just to hear that come out of another person's mouth is just amazing to me.
did you have to drive through the Lehigh Valley Tunnel or not?
Yes. Yeah, we did.
Yeah. So that was always, you knew you were getting close.
Yeah.
Lehigh Valley Tunnel. That was the best part.
I feel like our cars were on the highway at the same time or something at one point, for God's sake. So anyway, all right, Keith and I could just go on and on about this. We're just probably boring everybody.
I'm sure this is probably going to be your least listen to episode, and I apologize to everybody for that.
No worries, no worries. So, of course, everybody, this show is part of the FW Presents feed, but it does have its own Twitter page, because of course it does, because I can't help myself. So we're talking Mountain Comics over on Twitter at FWPMountainCom. You can subscribe to FW Presents on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher, and all the back episodes of FW Presents and of Mountain Comics are on the website, which is fireandwaterpodcast.com. And like I said, you will have an image gallery so you can see some of the great pages from this comic. And if you want to support the Fire and Water Podcast Network, go to patreon.com/FW Podcast, and there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So if you want to get name checked on either Mountain Comics or just FW Presents in general, go over to patreon.com and leave us a ongoing donation. So that's going to do it for this very, very special episode of Mountain Comics. This one, I tried to schedule it so it came out as close to my birthday as I could make it. Because that was always when, again, while I spent the Poconos, I spent all my birthdays up there. So this is, I knew that once Keith and I had talked about doing the show, I was going to schedule it for around my birthday. So this is my birthday episode of Mountain.
Well, happy birthday.
Thank you very much. So anyway, thanks everybody for listening, and we will see you next month. In the meantime, Keith and I are going to sit on the porch, crack open some Yoo-Hoo, and just watch the watch the sun come down over the lake, and maybe we'll make our way into Holly to buy some comics. Who knows? So again, thanks everybody for listening, and we will see you next month. Bye. Sun goes-